Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, welcome, welcome, welcome to you. And boy, am I glad to be back. Oh, I wouldn't have, that was not what you would ordinarily call time off. Time down, perhaps, but not time off. I guess it's this flu bug that's going around. Knocked me down, knocked Agnes down, hit every one of our children. And Agnes and Margie are the only ones left battling with it now. I think I'm over it. Knock wood. Oh, God, I hope pasteboard counts. That was just vile. And I found out in the course of this that I didn't get a flu shot, but it apparently didn't much matter because the flu shot only covers like 40% of the flu strains that are working in America this year. Feh. Ugh. You don't want this thing. If it's just, you don't want, hand washing, little, you know, surgical masks, rubber gloves, whatever. Do it. You don't want this. Because I would far rather have been behind the microphone both Thursday and Friday and yesterday. And I'm just hoping like the Dickens that my voice holds out for these 3 hours. If, however, at some point in the program it sounds like you're listening to Clint Eastwood or Beaver Cleaver going through puberty, one or the other, you know, either, well, Republican, do you feel lucky? Do you, punk? If it's one of those, you'll know the voice is fading. Or if it's, oh, golly gee, Mr. Bush, you sure are a jerk, you'll know that the voice isn't going to make it through 3 hours. But I have high hopes that it will. I have taken it very, very easy on my throat for a while. And even, well, I got within seeing distance of quitting smoking over the weekend. You know, you've got to have the physical stimulus of having the little bastard in your hands, but you know, inhaling ain't happening. So that's where we are this evening, and even now I don't have a cigarette in my hands. I've got a cigar going, but I don't have a cigarette, and I would not inhale this thing at pain or penalty, because I don't look good in green, especially when the green is in my face. It's a nice cigar, too. Cigars are much more enjoyable than cigarettes in the long run. Cigarettes are just, well, my oeuvre. Yeah, imagine Humphrey Bogart without a cigarette. Yeah, I'm as cool as Humphrey Bogart. Well, at least the attitude stayed. The rest of me might have gotten sick, but the attitude stayed with me, so there you go. There we go. But at any rate, we've got plenty to talk about this Tuesday evening. It feels like a Monday. It feels like a Thursday to me. And I hope you will enjoy every last little bit of it. You know the phone number, of course, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your own nickel. If you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance plan through your telecom spying company, it would be 304-658-3333. All of those ring right into the studio here, and we'll just take them as they come. Now, to be quite honest, I wasn't at my best, and I wasn't doing the best job in the world of following the news the first couple of days of this thing, because it's hard to see through, you know, pouring sheets of sweat and, you know, coughing until you can see the little you know, blood vessels in the back of your eyelids. Yeah, no. And by the way, I learned again just how difficult it would be for me to ever be Rush Limbaugh, because the coughing got so bad that I did take a dose of codeine cough syrup. Legitimately obtained, I should note. And, you know, just the 2-teaspoon dose to get through the night, get some sleep. And I don't like that stuff. That's creepy. I dreamed dreams and had visions. What does Jimmy Buffett say? Had tumultuous visions. And I understood how Samuel Taylor Coleridge could wake up the next morning and, you know, say that he saw 400 lines of poetry in his head. But boy, getting what goes on in your, because I'm weird enough as it is when I'm, you know, straight, sober, clean, whatever. You know, Technicolor mini movies inside my brains that way. But Lord, amping it up with a little bit of codeine, whew, mother. I mean, I hadn't seen anything like this since I was in college and went to see Fantasia on acid. Right down to the dancing hippos, I'll have you know. So, now my future as a right-wing talk host is pretty well foreclosed, because I just don't have the constitution for the addictions that are required. So I guess I'm just stuck here. You're stuck with me as I am. Liberal, progressive, cranky, and with that slightly sultry sort of Kathleen Turner thing going on in my voice right now. But no, let's see, we can start evil. We can start newsy. We can start ridiculous. I'm leaning toward ridiculous, but it may merge into evil. Because there's so much out there. The hot shots in military are going to try to shoot down a moving satellite tomorrow night. About 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday, the Navy is going to try to hit the great big school bus-sized 1,000-pound, whatever, 5,000-pound satellite that double secret probation, super duper top secret satellite US-193 that belongs to the highly secretive National Reconnaissance Office. You know, that journalism moment, time out. This is an NBC News story I'm looking at. Headline, U.S. to shoot down dead satellite Wednesday. First of all, the headline should be, U.S. to attempt to shoot down dead satellite Wednesday. Because I'd say if you called out to Harrah's in Reno, you wouldn't get much better than, 2-to-1 odds that we hit the target. But it's this sentence, that, and it's almost at the end of the article, like I said, journalism moment. The satellite, designated US-193, belongs to the highly secretive National Reconnaissance Office and is loaded with sensitive top-secret imaging devices. Now, unless the National Reconnaissance Office is a private enterprise, a corporation of some sort, unless that's the case, then that satellite, by God, belongs to us. It's a little bit of yours, a little bit of mine, a little bit of Mark Levine's, a little bit of Guy James's. Every American has an ownership stake in that stupid, busted, broke-down, no-good satellite. Because we, the people of the United States, are the government of the United States. But you see, it's journalism crap like this that makes it more palatable for people who don't ordinarily think about it to just let this sort of thinking into the background of their lives and their worlds and their, oh boy, zeitgeist or whatever. That the government is somehow separate from us and we are subjects of the government. And that just gets under my skin. It bothers me. You paid for that. You know, the top 10% of the wealth class of this country did not pay for that. You pay for that every time you look down at your paycheck and it says, taken out as federal tax withholdings. You, by God, paid for that satellite, and the damn thing does not belong to the National Reconnaissance Office. It belongs to the people of the United States. But slowly but surely, that is how we work this idea into the popular mindset that there is a break between, or a separation between, the idea of the government of the United States and the idea of we the people. Because in 21st century Bushmerica, which is in fact a fascist police state, Oh, no, I'm not a radical for saying that. The word fascist has now been mainstreamed. I'm sure you caught that. What was it, Thursday night, maybe? Friday? The word was finally said. Keith Olbermann looked straight into the camera and said, George Bush, you, sir, are a fascist. It was a seminal moment as far as I'm concerned. It used to be that to use the word fascist meant that people, people with nice haircuts who lived in nice houses and drove nice cars would immediately dismiss you. Oh, he's one of those radical, dirty hippies. They think everybody's a fascist who doesn't want to eat granola. No, it just happens that a lot of us out here know what the definition of fascism is, and know that that definition is textbook where it is associated with George W. Bush and every one of the filthy little monsters who associate themselves with him and have their front feet in the trough with him. If it's not a fascist police state, why do we need a satellite, whether it works or not, with highfalutin optics designed to spy on American citizens, that has the capacity to be used on American citizens? And where's the legislation that would stop it from being used on American citizens? Sorry, there isn't any. In a fascist dictatorship, a fascist police state, there is no check on the abuse of governmental power. Just as the Senate of the United States refused to put a check on the telecoms. But Mark Levin did a far better job with that than I could ever begin to attempt to. So I'll just note that this spy satellite that could be used not only against foreign governments and foreign soil, but against the people of the United States itself, ourselves, the Navy's going to try to shoot it down. Somewhere about 600 miles northwest of Hawaii, Wednesday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, which I guess would still be way in the middle, early afternoon in Hawaii, the USS Lake Erie will launch an SM-3 tactical missile to try to blow up the fuel tank on this satellite because it contains hydrazine fuel, which is extremely toxic. Now, bear in mind, while this satellite does belong to us, we're never going to get any value out of it because the darn thing didn't work from almost the minute that it went up. It was just space junk from the minute that it deployed in December 2006. And as has been noted on this and other programs before, it's due to just sort of uncontrolledly tumble back into Earth or Earth's atmosphere and into Earth in big pieces sometime in early March. So the marksmen of the United States Navy aboard the USS Lake Erie are going to shoot it down. Now here's what has to happen. The SM-3 missile is a three-stage affair, and it has a kinetic kill warhead that employs infrared sensors to guide it to the target. Kinetic kill means that it is not an explosive warhead, just a bunch of weight, kinetic energy. It has to hit this school bus-sized satellite, which is really not a very big target in the grand scope of things, at about 22,000 miles an hour in order to destroy the satellite as it hovers 130 miles above the Earth. There's only one problem. The kinetic kill warhead has, as I mentioned, infrared sensors. Infrared sensors, of course, detect, come on, science class, heat, energy. Well, there's only one problem. The stupid, busted, broke-down Walmart satellite that we sent up ain't got no power. So the Navy has to wait until, I mean, talk about, the dog said if I get him a bone, he'll tell me how to get the cat, and the cat told me if I'd get him a fish, he'd tell me where I could find a piece of cheese. I wonder what the cheese will want. I mean, this is a Rube Goldberg operation, okay? Anybody who, when you remember as kids of a certain age, playing that wonderful game, Mousetrap, that took 15 minutes to set up, and then you moved your little men around the board until somebody finally hit the right spot, and you started the whole Rube Goldberg device, and the ball fell, and it hit the thing, and it swung into the other thing, and then the other thing and hit the thing, and eventually the little basket falls down over the mouse. Well, this is that. This is a Rube. Google it. Rube Goldberg devices were delightful little pieces of imaginative genius. Great big mechanistic affairs designed to do little bitty itsy bitsy pieces of nothing. You see a lot of them in Warner Brothers cartoons, most frequently, I believe, used by the likes of Daffy Duck and Wile E. Coyote. And like I've said before, I think this thing, if it comes down in pieces, the government's going to run to pick them up, because somewhere stamped on the side of this is the word ACME. So anyway, the problem is, this is a heat and power-seeking kinetic warhead trying to shoot down something that has no heat or power. So they have to wait until the satellite exactly moves into the sun's rays, so the sun heats the satellite, so the warhead's infrared sensors can detect something hot. And our tax dollars pay for this. I'm in the wrong business. Mr. President, I propose we build a giant slingshot in the desert. Yeah, that's it. It really? Giant slingshot, Bob? And that's how we're going to... Absolutely. How much is the giant slingshot going to cost us? I can do the giant slingshot for about $10 billion, Mr. President. It's a bargain. See the cashier on the way out and pick up your check. Hey, guys, we're going to build a giant slingshot. So that's a starting place. But the stupidity is not limited to space, which would appear to be the final frontier of stupidity. No. No, we've got plenty of stupidity right here on Earth. And you know what? The stupidity extends to some people who are probably feeling pretty stupid right now, who are otherwise known as electronics consumers. Remember Betamax? I remember a long, long time back, I guess my late teen, early 20s, whatever, when there would be heated debates between people who had just bought the new $700 newfangled VHS video cassette recorder player and people who were more purist and said, well, we got the Sony Betamax, and it's by far the better system and better medium. And you know what it was? It was higher quality, and it had this really cool... this really cool remote control on it that you couldn't lose because it had a wire going all the way to the unit. And movies came out on Betamax, and then it was, video stores. You know, there was a Betamax section and there was a VHS section until somebody finally won the war, and that winner was VHS. And there were a lot of people sitting around looking at suddenly $750 paperweights that were Betamax. Well, it's happened again, because Toshiba has taken a powder on its DVD format, announcing today that it will no longer develop, make, or market HD DVD players and recorders, thereby ceding the battlefield to Blu-ray disc technology. Toshiba President Atsutoshi Nishida said, "We concluded that a swift decision would be best." That would have been an appropriate statement 6 months ago. And it really is a bit of vengeance, because Blu-ray is backed by Sony, who took the butt-whipping on Betamax. Ooh, we're 1-1 now. So there's a lot of people with HD DVD stuff out there that was incredibly expensive anyway, who are probably feeling a little bit less than intelligent. But no, no, for just plain stupid, just plain ignorant, idiotic, moronic, embarrassingly foolish, we have to go to Florida. Florida. Because what would appear to be a victory on for, you know, the intelligent people, for our side, has been diluted and demeaned by the right-wing religion industry and the knuckle-walking mouth-breathers who swear that they're not related to primates, and I tend to agree because most chimpanzees and God knows all of the great apes are a lot smarter than any fundamentalist religionist. There was a vote at Florida's Board of Education. That vote went down today. A 4-3 vote to change standards for teaching science in Florida's public schools. According to the Miami Herald, and I quote, "For the first time ever, evolution is to be taught clearly and explicitly in Florida classrooms now that the Florida Board of Education approved a batch of new science standards that says the E word." Oh, isn't that cute? Isn't that quaint? The Miami Herald calls evolution the E word. That's like they used to call liberals the L word. Hey, Miami Herald, F word you, buddy. Now, apparently, in the past, Florida's science standards referred to evolution, quote, as biological changes over time. Florida scientists and school teachers and university professors were glad of the shift to evolution, to actually using the word. But it was not to happen without a certain amount of monkey business on the part of the right-wing religion industry. A gang of fundamentalist theocratic thugs, groups like the Christian Coalition of Florida and the Florida Family Policy Council, managed to strong-arm the Florida Board of Education to make them insert a caveat referring to evolution in every instance as the theory of evolution. You know, like the theory of gravity. Like the theory of air. Or the theory of the behavior of gases. The Florida Family Policy Council and the Christian Coalition of Florida said they were vigorously opposed to the evolution language because it, quote, clashes with their religious convictions or their personal beliefs that evolution has not been proved. So, I've got some audio here for you. I would not dare, I don't think, just read this to you and expect you to, because, you know, I don't just make this stuff up. But sometimes it's just a little bit too ridiculous for me to just read the quote to you and have you absolutely convinced that silly old Bob isn't sort of editorializing along the way. Mm-mm. No, no. No, this is the real deal. We're talking about a Florida panhandle minister who went to the Board of Education meeting, a public hearing, and claimed that he had read all, and claimed that he, well, you'll hear him, claims that he's read Charles Darwin's Origin of Species. Well, this is what you get.
Maybe have a household pet, or maybe some of the other board members, maybe a household pet at home, or maybe somebody here. See, I brought these oranges down here with me. I was going to eat them, but after reading all the material I've read this last weekend, I've learned from some of the writings that, and I'm just convinced, I know beyond the shadow of a doubt, this orange right here is the first cousin of somebody's pet cat. And this orange here, I'm convinced, just because I've got a conviction, all I've learned within, now I know this orange here is no doubt the parent of somebody's pet dog.
See how it works? They attempt to make light of scientific fact by what is referred to in argument and debate circles as a reductio ad absurdum. This man is arguing that oranges are related to cats and dogs. Of course, I hate to break his pointy little head. Heart, I'm sorry. Wishful thinking. But life is, after all, life. And it all started somewhere. And it wasn't in a garden. And there were no talking snakes involved, no matter how hard he wishes for gossipy water moccasins and things like that. But let's continue. Like I said, I wouldn't just quote this guy to you. You need to hear it for yourself.
And I wondered, would you agree with me, Commissioner, these are related to human beings? You know what? I've read, and I'm happy to report, that evolution supports my belief that these oranges are, in fact, related to human beings.
Amen.
In 1859...
Actually, I have a hard time believing that, because I think the orange probably has a little bit more sense, but never mind.
In fact, Charles Darwin wrote in his book called Origin of Species... He wrote on page 176 something.
Now, how many editions of The Origin of Species do you think there have been? He wrote on page 176. Mm-hmm. You got the copies there to distribute to the commissioner there, Reverend? You old fraud? You fake? You piece of crap? No, you don't. You picked this up off of some little right-wing religion industry website, and you thought it was so cute. It's an absolute reputation. It's a reputation of the theory of evolution.
It proves that I'm telling you the truth. He said, it's a truly wonderful fact that all animals and all plants throughout all time and space are related to each other. So you see... I have irrefutable evidence that these oranges are, in fact, related to somebody's pets. And if you don't believe that, well...
No, what we've got is irrefutable evidence that you're a moron, Reverend.
Down inside, you really don't believe in evolution.
That word, that stinking, rotten, filthy, dirty little word that I hate so much, believe! You don't believe in evolution. Evolution is not an article of faith, Reverend. We're talking about scientific facts versus your fairy tale beliefs. You believe in talking snakes. You believe that Adam and Eve were cast out of the garden because Eve had a conversation with a gossipy water moccasin. Had to be a water moccasin. I mean, well, I don't know. That part of the world, there are other snakes that climb trees, right? This fool believes that he deserves to be stoned for eating shrimp. And him in Florida. This fool believes that wearing fibers, the clothing of different fibers, is enough to get you killed. He is, after all, a biblical literalist. But let's go on. There's so much more to enjoy.
You know, funny thing happened to me yesterday on the way down here. I stopped.
I'm not going to leave that alone.
I stopped off in a place called Gainesville at a truck stop, and I was engaged in a conversation with a particular truck driver. And after about 5 minutes, he said to me, you know what, I want to tell you something happened to me. Strangest thing happened to me a few years ago, and I just got...
Now, see, that is the funny thing about a preacher. A preacher can just make junk up and hold it forth as reality. And well, he's enlightening the Gospels, you see. He's lying is what he's doing. Because being a minister of the gospel and a fundamentalist at the same time, that makes him a liar. Fundamentalists don't have the truth in them. So he's going to tell us this story that he attributes to some trucker that never happened. This is some product of the fulminations of the paltry, thin, gray settlings that slosh around between his ears and pass in fundamental world as brains.
I'll share it with you. He said, out on Interstate 60 out west, never heard of the interstate. He said, but on exit 563, there are two highways that cross, Highway 30, Highway 111, underneath the high rise of this particular interstate. And he said, as I was approaching, he said, I might point out, before I got there, I had learned later that somebody had pulled up the...
Huh? Somewhere in this story, I think there's going to be a mushroom or a little cactus involved or something. High rises and interstates that did 63 and 111, 9 and 111 and I learned, oh.
Stop signs at...
Bats! Oh, my God, bats!
This intersection, no traffic light was there. He said...
I have yet to see a traffic light on an interstate, but, you know, that's me.
And as I approached, I noticed these trucks, four big trucks, two of them hauling turkeys, two of them waste management trucks, were all headed to the intersection, equal distances.
Now, say he's a minister of the gospel, so he's ruining the joke because he's having to clean it up. What it is it's a truckload of turkeys and a truckload of poop. But, you know, he's man of God, so he's got a clean mouth and he don't cuss.
This part about to arrive at the same time, no stop signs, and I was wondering, well, these trucks aren't slowing down. Is anybody going to stop? And about the time I got to the top of the high rise, he said, there was a big...
Again with the high rise and semi-truckers, semi-tractor trailers on high rises. Oh, Ward, I think you were a little hard on the beaver last night.
Collision. There was a big bang, and then all of a sudden, everybody was...
Oh, he got it. There it was. There was a big bang. Oh, dang, he's funny. He's clever. He's clever.
Killed. Everything was killed. He said, but also there was a chemical, a planetary, organic, and a macro evolution that all occurred at one time. He said, and about the time this mushroom cloud began to rise up in the air...
Skip a bit, brother.
You want to wrap it up,
there
please?
Was a gene pool.
Oh, there was a gene pool. Well, God knows you came from the shallow end of it there, Reverend.
Mix up between the turkeys and the gene pools of the maggots off the waste management trucks, and then there was a mutation that produced a new offspring. I said, well, I've got two questions, and I'll wrap this up.
Thank you very much. You're past the 10 minutes now.
Well, I said, where are they, and what are they called? He said, they're in Tallahassee, Florida, and they're members of the Department of Education.
Thanks, sir.
And I said, I don't believe that.
Sir, thank you very much.
I don't believe that, because I know these folks have done great jobs, and I know they can accomplish great jobs. Now, that's absurd. That's really absurd. Inside, if that made you angry, there's a reason for it. You need to ask yourself why. Now,
I will, Reverend. I'll ask myself why. I'll answer. That makes me angry because you, in your rock-solid, God said it, I believe it, and that settles it mindset, have managed by your little twisted, poorly delivered parable to cast aspersion and make light of men and women over the course of centuries and nay, yea, verily, millennia, who have struggled to understand their world. And oftentimes have been persecuted, tortured, tormented, and killed by ignorant, dirt-grubbing, filth-talking, jackassed morons like you, Reverend. Galileo came near to being killed by Holy Mother Church for simply suggesting that the available evidence proved not believed, but proved, that the earth revolves around the sun and not vice versa. People were burned as witches for pointing out that bathing, frequent bathing, would avert the diseases that so often swept like wildfire through medieval communities. The list of tormented men and women of science whose lives were made a hell on earth by Christians is almost limitless. And so, yes, yes, absolutely yes, I am angered, Reverend, by your cute, derogatory, denigratory display of your disdain for the blood and the sweat and the tears and the toil of people who have labored to lift humankind out of the swamp of religious superstition, out of the darkness of fundamentalist theocracy. I do get angry, Reverend.
I've got one more comment. Thanks for all you've done. You've achieved some wonderful things. Now achieve one more thing. Keep the apple in the hand of the classroom teacher and not the orange.
Keep the apple in the hand of the classroom teacher and not the orange?
Wes?
I've got no idea whatsoever what that meant. But I do know that it means something. And it means far more than most of us even acknowledge. When these fundamentalists get away with this kind of crap under the guise of free speech. You see, they have free speech to say this kind of garbage. But you and I, the normal people, we don't have free speech to see that good science is taught to our children. No, no. And I'm going to the phones in a second, but please bear in mind that this guy is not an anomaly in the Floridas and Kansases and West Virginias of this world. He's not an anomaly in the least. The St. Petersburg Times in Florida polled residents there and found only 22% want public schools to teach an evolution-only curriculum. 50% of those polled want the schools to teach only bunk like creationism and intelligent design. And those numbers are extrapolatable into the national consciousness, especially in the South and the Midwest. We're screwed. We're just screwed. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
Hello?
Yeah.
Who I got here?
It's Bob. Bob?
Bob from Bob Kincaid from West Virginia?
The one and only.
The one and only. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Bob. How you been?
Well, I'm kind of confused like you are, and most of our kindred are right now, a little bit confused and stunned a little bit just afraid of their own shadows. See, all them, them preachers and teachers, I didn't know this was Wednesday night prayer meeting. The opening, I thought it was Tuesday.
No, it is. It's still Tuesday.
Yeah, we're dang near on to Wednesday, aren't we? And there's all that extrapolating and all that talking about talking, right? Everybody is trying to parse a whole bunch of words, Bob. They're trying to make sense out of what people are saying. But they ain't listening. They don't hear each other. All they do is hear themselves talk to themselves. You know what I'm saying?
I do. Because what happens is these people don't move in circles of normal human beings. What they do, Bob, is they go to their little fundy churches every time the door opens,
right.
And they sit around and they just sort of echo each other. Evolution ain't nothing but a theory. That's right. It's a theory. It says so on page 176 that man and oranges is related. Hallelujah. Praise Jesus.
Listen to the, what do you call it, the mainstream media, or what is it, MSM? Or?
Yeah, I read an article not too long back, Bob, and I'm not going to call them that anymore, because you know what? None of the crap that they put out there is actually mainstream.
No, it isn't mainstream. Bob, it's not even common sense. That's the problem with America today. They don't got no doggone common sense. Common sense is when you think for yourself first, and then you think for your neighbor, and you talk to your neighbor, and you ask him, well, what did you make of that? That guy over there, that long, tall guy with that big dimple on his cheek, splitting that doggone log. Did he make sense back there? His name was, I forget it, but it was Abe Lincoln or something like
that. Yeah, that Lincoln feller.
Yeah, that Lincoln feller. Did he make sense back then? See, we're talking common sense here, Bob. We're not talking somebody telling you what to think. We're trying to think for ourselves, for a change. And that's what you do. And you've done it spectacularly. Okay? Now I will say that. You have done it spectacularly. Okay? You've talked against guys like me because you do, in a way. When you talk to me, Bob, you kind of make me wake up and take a look at myself and make me try to think for a bit. Just a little bit. Sometimes you got to just say, enough is enough. And I think that's what you just did. You said, enough is enough. I don't want to hear any more of your... Okay. What is that thing that...
Bug spray.
Or bat squeeze, okay?
Yeah.
Same difference, okay? Because you can't say it on the air and be decent. If you say it, then you're saying the bull skedaddle thing that the
sure
general did back there. He didn't say the he put his point across. Okay, and that was what was his name again? The other one. Okay, yeah, another West. Moreland in another theater of war.
Yeah, isn't it funny how it's always a theater?
Yeah, it's always a theater. It's not really killing grounds like I had to live through and do what I did through, but it is not a theater. But hey, everything's a theater, Bob. It's like that preacher guy you were choking down just a few minutes ago. You were just listening to somebody try to make you swallow a bunch of squat, okay?
Yeah.
And that's what it is, Bob. I'm tired of listening to people trying to considered it.
But you know, the more moderate folks among us, Bob, would say that that's the price we pay for having free speech in America.
Oh, come on, Bob. Free speech? Do you realize what you and I have just done? Was there free speech between you and I? There's no free speech, Bob. You cannot speak freely in this nation. You cannot speak freely among your friends. You can't speak freely anywhere in this country because you're not in the United States of America. You are in the disjointed states of some country.
Well, see, and that's the thing. And I have no evidence to suggest that this happened, but if somebody stood up after that freak, Bob, and said what I said, that this guy's beautiful religion had been responsible for the murder and torture and death, dismemberment, maiming, horror of countless millions of people, then he would have been said to be intolerant of his faith.
Bob, I just sat through you know, when they took all those videotapes of Adolf Hitler and what was her name? His girlfriend.
Oh, Eva Braun.
Eva Braun, and they took all those tapes and they put them into the computer and they came up with what he was really saying and what he really.
Oh, I know. I saw that. Was quite fascinating, really.
Yeah, it really was, wasn't it? But you know what? What it did is it showed me a picture, a pure, unadulterated picture of Adolf Hitler and those that adore him and act like him. And, you know, I could take, you know, the verbiages of this squatting little chimpanzee, George W. Bush, in the White House right now. Take out the words, put the pictures there with his mouth moving and his finger flipping and all the same gestures that pontificating little fool did back in the 1930s, and put George Bush in there, and I'd come up with the same energy.
You know, you've just hit on something. I don't have the means of doing it, but I know there are people out there who do, Bob. Take some of George Bush's more stupid pronouncements and make them fit the mouth movements of Adolf Hitler.
And it would be an exact.
And it would be a match. Fit. Yeah, yeah. And it's so believable.
No, it is a fact, Bob. We are living in the Fourth Reich. We're not living in the United States of America. We're living under George Bush's reenactment of being little Hitler, okay? And that's what that wonderful German chancellor came and said. He is the same thing as Hitler, and if you don't look at it and see it, then you are blind or you are a follower of Nazis. And that is the problem with America today, Bob. That's our problem. It's our problem, and we got to fix it, because if we don't fix it, the world will be dead, and our children have no future, because we are not even thinking about the future. We're just following this little dictator, Adolf George Bush. I don't give a hoot in hell what you call the Bush family. I call them the same thing that Mike Malloy calls them. These are the Bush crime family, the Hitler crime family. They are criminals. They are Nazis. They are
fascists. They're fascists.
They are beyond.
They're really not Nazis, because they don't have all the cool uniforms quite yet and all the mystical trappings exactly. But they do. But they're getting pretty close. No, they're just plain old garden variety fascists, like what Keith Olbermann said last week. And I haven't I haven't seen any fallout from that yet. I think if it had been anybody but Keith Olbermann, the person would have been pulled off the air by now. You know what I mean?
Bob, I love you, son. I really do. But you have the spirit of your father, and he is strong, and I have my father's strength in me. And we, the American people, the people of this nation, we the people, not those fascists, not those filthy, 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 filthy fascists, can take this world from us, because the world belongs to the people that live in this world, that love in this world, that care in this world, that give to this world, that give back to the land, Bob. We don't take like the, what is that, that coal company down there in West Virginia that's stripping my mountains and ripping them asunder.
Yep.
What is that called? I shudder to think of how many valleys, how many streams, how many wonderful, wonderful, beautiful things have been destroyed by these monsters, like the Massey Coal Company.
Yep, no, that's the folks.
Yeah, that. These layers of waste, like Adolf Hitler, George Bush, the Massey Coal Company, have done to this earth, this good earth, this wonderful globe that we live on. They have done more damage than all. You know, you can call me anything you want to, but You can't call me unfaithful, because I have stood and I stand against them, Bob, and I stand with you. And any man, any woman, any human being on this planet, I stand with you. I stand with the Iraqis that stand against the fascist United States government. I stand with them. I do not stand with Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda or whatever the CIA came up with to give a name to something the Osama Bam Dama came up with when he was sitting in the cave. I'm talking about people of this earth. That young woman, that beautiful young girl that was pictured afraid to live in her country of Afghanistan after the Russian invasion. And she grew up to be a woman. Now she's afraid of the American invasion. I am ashamed of this nation, Bob, but I'm not ashamed of you. And I'm not ashamed of all those that tune in to the Head On Radio Network, because we're taking them on head on. Because I will not lay down my courage, my heart, my soul until this earth is healed again. When we are, what's that thing of Mike Malloy does it so dang good? He says, when the last Nazi dies.
Yep, I know. Hey, Bob, I got a roll, brother.
I'm sorry, I just got...
No, don't apologize. I just I got to take a little break and pour some sweet tea down my throat and coat the vocal cords. That's all.
Yeah, love you, boy.
All right, you take care.
Take care, brother.
Bye, Bob. A lot of fight in that, man. A lot of admirable fight. And I am going to give I'm sorry, I got to wimp out a little bit and keep the I don't know, grease on the vocal cords or whatever. But at any rate, we'll be back after a little tunage. Because all this stuff does sort of seamlessly slide together one story into the next. I'll prove it when we get back. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. Listener-supported conversation radio for America.
Forage in the forest like a primate. Using chopping tools instead of hot plates.
Your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Some better now. Just have to treat it a little. I don't mean to sound like a big old sissy or anything, but you just. I don't want to do one night and then lose three more, so. This being an audio medium, I can't hold up signs or do sign language or anything.
And I don't want to wind up doing this by the end of the show.
So I might have to take a couple of breaks along the way. And that means music for the time being, because the other story I didn't tell you. While I was sitting in the malaria sweats on Friday night, I went to bed, took a dose of the codeine cough syrup like I told you about, and had me some tremulous dreams. Got up Saturday morning, came into the studio, thought, turned on the computer, and the computer wouldn't turn on. And this is one of those great moments in technology, one of those for want of a nail, the shoe was lost kind of things. I don't know. This being a computer medium, it's not like terrestrial buggy whip, worn out, old, tired, old, beat up, terrestrial radio. There's a certain amount of, and in many instances, far more expertise than I have. But the motherboard on the computer that I built had these two little plastic clips where the heat sink fits down over the CPU. And there's a metal clip on either side, and it kind of clamps down and holds everything together. Well, it turned out that the board didn't fail. The CPU didn't fail. It was merely a matter of that little tiny plastic tab shearing away. And it sheared off, and the cooling fan and heatsink gave way. And then the motherboard did cook and took out the processor as well. So in the middle of the great flu of '08, I dialed up the phone and said, "Peter, help!" And spent part of my flu rebuilding a computer. So we don't. Everything is not back up to snuff. In case here, let me get this said. The show is of course brought to you in part every night. All the shows on the horn are brought to you in part by our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. But we are also partially sponsored by the fine folks at CityNet, CityNet.net, for your VoIP. Telephony needs, broadband telephony. So I'm in the process of getting warranty coverage on the failed motherboard and trying to get warranty coverage on the failed chip. So we're sort of in a stopgap mode for the next few days until that gets straightened around. But you know, no damage to the data, but I can't, for reasons that are probably too boring to explain, I can't get the data off the old, or I can't get the data off the hard drives that were in the main production computer onto the one that I built out of spare parts to get us through. in that butchering of a wonderful book, the movie version of Forrest Gump, what does Tom Cruise say? "At least I ain't led no humdrum life." That's me. Oh, Lord, yes, that's me. But I told you that all of this stuff could be strung together. Look, the last time Agnes and I had a flu like this was 1993, 15 years ago, shortly before we were married. And it was awful. And it was during the great blizzard of March of 93. We lived in an old farmhouse on top of a mountain. And this is before any of the babies came along or anything. And the snow laid so heavy on the roof of this old farmhouse that when it melted, it began leaking and water ran down on the... And so just as, you know, the computer crapped out this time through, the last time it was water running into the house and filling up the floor. And so that was I never get to just... Agnes and I, you know, we never get to just have the flu. It has to be the flu and a disaster. Because, you know, that's... I don't know. We must have been like really self-centered pharaohs and she must have been like a really self-centered queen or dowager empress or something in another life, you know, sitting around, "Peel me a grape." Because we're working it out this time through, I promise. We're working it out. Or working it off, I don't know. "The Pharaoh desires grapes. Bring me a grape, Fellaheen." So that's it. But you know what? What I'm getting at, though, in conjunction with what we were talking about in the first hour, if evolution was just a theory, just big old lie put together by the devil, you know, just the same way that the devil hid those dinosaur bones way down in the rock to confound the unbelievers. Well, I wouldn't have gotten the flu this time because the flu wouldn't have mutated. The flu would not have, in other words, evolved and gotten me and Agnes this time through, too. No, we would have just licked it the first time, and then, you know, once you've had a virus, you get immune to the virus, and boom, you're done. But no, they do. They mutate, and they find other ways to because this is all survival of the fittest. Flu comes along, we find a way to counter it. The flu finds a way to counter what we counter with, because it is attempting to survive, because that is the nature of life on this sweet little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe. Everything is trying to survive, from flu viruses. To human beings. Sadly, some human beings have to struggle more than others do. But just because, that Dear Leader took his Africa trip. He had to. Because it's one of those legacy things where, you remember when Bill Clinton... Remember when Bill Clinton went to Africa and people walked barefoot for 50 and 60 and 100 miles just to see that man who was talking about a more hopeful world? I remember that. And so, consequently, Dear Leader had to go to Africa too. And having done so, as he tours Africa this week, the White House is out there beating its own little garbage can lid drum, talking about how it's fought disease. Yeah, tell it to somebody who wants no. The White House said. Via the President's Global AIDS Coordinator, Mark Dybul. The President is requesting an increase for our contribution to the Global Fund to fight AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria, an increase above his last year request from $300 million to $500 million. That would be all well and good, I suppose, if only it were true. The Washington Post, on the other hand, says, quote, Bush did request $300 million for the Global Fund for the current fiscal year, but Congress decided to go further and approve $841 million. So even though Bush's request for $500 million for the next fiscal year is higher than he requested the year before, in reality, it would cut the U.S. contribution back from the $841 million that the fund is getting, in the words of the Washington Post, in cold, hard cash this year. Good God. You know, it's kind of like when he comes into the State of the Union and says, I love the people of Iraq, and then starts bombing them. I'm going to Africa to look into this AIDS thingy. We're going to increase funding. And the minute he says increase funding, you know that because it's coming out of George W. Bush's mouth, it means we're going to cut funding. Mother. He was pressed on the issue. Bush was. And when someone mentioned that it's actually less money, his response was, well, you don't want to pile up money. Huh? What? Who? No, it all fits. You know, we don't need more money for AIDS research and treatment in Africa, because you don't want to pad up money. After all, the HIV virus is certainly not evolving or anything. Neither, of course, is the tuberculosis pathogen or malaria evolving. Same old malaria, same old tuberculosis. Now, we just turned our back on it for a little bit and it got loose again. That's all it is. It's these kind of stories and these kind of moments that make me just ache for January the 20th, 2009. Just ache for it. But then I realize that John McCain is out there wandering around waiting to be the next Bush. And that turns my bowels all to water. Let's go to the phones. See what we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, for one thing, you have to understand these things don't evolve, Bob. It's the devil putting in evil humors.
That, right, yeah, you're right, right. Black bile. I was demon possessed from roughly Tuesday till today.
Right.
And only the application of specially consecrated pineapple juice has chased it from my system.
As you know, I have a double whammy, not only because of my religion, but can you imagine what somebody in, say, the 1400s who had a seizure disorder, how they were treated?
Demon possessed.
You bet your beppy.
Well, heck, I mean,
exercise it out of you, they beat it out of you or tortured it out of you.
Even Socrates, who had a seizure disorder, ultimately he got killed. That was, you know, an enlightened society.
Why do you think Julius Caesar hid his?
Sure.
You knew better.
Well, it's kind of hard to claim that. Well, see, but they got away with it a little bit. I mean, because it's come down to us that he had one. But he was related to the goddess Venus.
Yeah, but that's only after the fact. During his lifetime, he hid it.
Not good for the public image.
Oh, no. Because his people would have turned on him. His soldiers would have turned on him.
True.
You know, just, yeah. Yeah, and I agree with you about, oh, you know, you're just sitting there going, is it 2009 yet? Is it 2009 yet? Please.
But then I see this stuff from the Florida Board of Education, this freak with these oranges talking about being related to kittens, and I'm asking, is it 1109 yet?
Yeah. If he is, I have to tell you, if you were going to carry his logic to its ultimate absurdity, fine, we'll treat him according to his religion. Bring on the auto da fe.
Never mind that, just no flu shot.
For him, yeah.
No pneumonia shot. He looked like an older fella.
No surgery. No x-rays.
Nope. We'll just pray for a miracle healing.
Yeah. Just pray for a miracle healing. And when gangrene sets in because you couldn't get that cut treated, well, it's evil humors.
And it wouldn't have happened except for the fact that you're a dirty little sinner.
Yeah, and you didn't believe enough.
You'd be healed if you loved God enough, brother.
Yeah. Now, I don't know about you, but that's a real good definition of insanity.
But again, my point, Susan, if you say that, if somebody had gotten up to the podium and said, you know, what I said, that person, I can't believe you'd say something like that. You're demeaning his faith. Screw his faith. We're talking about reality. Faith is for Sunday.
My religion preaches tolerance. My religion also does not preach idiocy. He's preaching idiocy. I don't have to put up.
But you know what's fun, Susan? You know what their answer to that is? You have thought yourself right out of your salvation. Your big brain has kept you from having the faith of a little child, and you're going to hell for it. Oh, I've had that said to me. One of the Fundy listeners that I had over in Beckley, I never know if he still listens, but told me on a couple occasions that I had intellectualized myself out of salvation. In other words, I used the brain that God gave me to try to understand that what the Fundies believe is a bunch of crap, and that therefore God must have done so. The devil got my brain. Yeah.
Look at it this way. Think of all the friends, including me, you're going to run into in hell.
And more than that, more than that, the fact that, you know, if in fact the Falwells and these Fundies are in heaven, not any place that I want to go.
Yeah. Who needs it?
Mark Twain pointed out that nobody in their right mind views sitting around plucking at a harp on a Sunday afternoon as nice, restful respite time, and yet we're expected to believe that it's going to be just the very thing to do for all eternity.
One of your re-netcasts while you were ill was the show where you were talking about his stupidness in chief and his comments about lynching.
The rampant lynching. That one's still with me.
Yeah.
The era of rampant lynching. Now we're in the era of periodic lynching.
Okay, and you played that song.
How so?
You played a song.
Yeah. John Kuntz's Emmett Till song, right.
Yeah. Okay. Up on the blog right now is a very rare YouTube of none other than Billie Holiday singing Strange.
Yeah, that's a classic.
The Great Billie Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my word. I came across that and I almost fell off the chair. It's amazing what you can find on YouTube. The main reason I called is just stupid quarrel the campaigns are having.
Oh, is this the plagiarism fight?
Yeah. They've got problems up one side and down the other, and they're devolving into this.
McCain-Huckabee, 2008. And it'll be our own fault.
Will you two idiots grow up?
The thing is, I think somebody has to say that to them personally, and it desperately needs to be said.
I wonder if we maybe shouldn't start bombarding Kennedy's office.
Don't say bombarding and Kennedy. Just don't.
Okay. Yes, I understand it.
That's right wing radio. wrong political spectrum.
Yeah, especially when I worked on Bobby Kennedy's campaign, which is why the reason I'm not an Obama bot. All my enthusiasm bled out on the floor of the Ambassador Hotel.
Yeah, I know.
If it hadn't, I'm sure I would be in Obama, but it's wonderful to see the young people coming in. It's just, it's like 1968 all over again. But these people, we need to have people inundate, is that a better word? Maybe Kennedy's office, Gore's, all of the elder statesmen of the Democratic Party and say, people, we have lots of problems. Lay off.
Yeah. What do you say we start talking about the presumptive Republican nominee and the presumptive vice presidential nominee and what freaks they are? It's never too early to point out what monsters they are. Instead of he's a plagiarist. Oh well, you, no, I'm not. Yes, you are. Oh, you
they're
know.
Both plagiarists. Because the night of the
if this was their senior high school term paper, it might matter.
Graham Richards.
you see what I'm saying? If this was their senior high school term paper, Susan, it might matter. But this is politics, and it's blood sport, and we're trying to apply some sort of Marcus of Queensberry rules, and it's just a bunch of bogus BS. I know. Hey, Susan, I got a couple of calls stacked up. I got a roll, dear, but point well taken.
Give my love to everybody.
I sure will. And I'll tell...
Everybody, email people like this and say, we need you to step in and tell these people to knock it off. Tell them to grow up. Bye.
Bye now. Thanks, Susan. Later. Yeah. Grow up and knock it off. Hi, who have I got?
Well, this is Kate at WQRZ in Waveland, Mississippi.
Oh, wow.
Hey. Yeah, Waveland. Little Waveland right
now. WQRZ.
Yeah, there's some
Waveland.
There's some really good songs that people put to tunes right after the storm, and Bryce has a bunch of the CDs, and some of the stuff is just really poignant. Whatever. He's the contact point for Emergency Operations Center and the weather, and he's only 100 watts. But he stayed on 24/7 and did the whole county, and it's a pretty critical. It's a critical station, and I'm learning more about radio, radio than I ever thought I wanted to know. I know what a capacitor is now.
Oh dear, you're doomed. That's like with all the computer hardware I've had to learn to fool around with. Peter said the other day, that's it, Bob. I'm sending you the official feather boa.
Okay.
I don't know. I think after I build my fifth or sixth one, I get egg roll or something.
Yeah, right. Well, I keep thinking about, occasionally I catch myself comparing this 100-watt terrestrial radio with the boards and everything. To thinking, gee, it would be so much simpler to just be internet, wouldn't it? No. until I hear your story about melting down. Oh, God, that was awful.
Just another day in paradise.
Mm-hmm. That's
Ooh, there's a song I could use.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I've been down here since the night after I called from Mount Belzoni. And I had to stop on the road because of tornadoes. I checked in with Bryce, and he said, oh, sit where you're at, honey. It's really awful down here. And I think that was the night that Prattville, Alabama got hit. And, that was this week. Anyway, I got down here probably the day before Valentine's Day or something. I don't know, whatever. But, God, there's so much work to do, and I haven't even hardly left the place. He's at the end of a dirt road. Well, it's a little bit paved, but it's kind of dirt around here. But if you go to the website, WQRZ, it shows a lot of things that happened after the storm and his house that caved in. And somebody from New York came down and haul the house away for him. And, I mean, he got a big, big boost from the community. I mean, it was just overwhelming response. And, so anyway, I'm back to doing administrative stuff and making out an application to go to 25,000 watts from FCC, and it all has to be done in triplicate, including the 180-some letters from the public.
Oh, yeah, and there's got to be 8x10 color glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, too. Don't forget that part. If you are actually wandering into that swamp, Kate, the swamp of FCC regulation and application processes, you're going to come out with a level of knowledge that is probably somewhere between a PhD and a JD.
Way more than I need.
Oh yeah, TMI.
Yeah, it's we just have to get it done, and he doesn't have any administrative staff, and as far as the data entry and logging in the CDs that come into the station, and then they go back into the, you know, he's on 24/7, and those, whatever they're called, the racks or the stacks or something, have to be changed out periodically, and like Tuesday is Blues Day, and Saturday night's Dance Night, and, you know, he changes.
Oh, that just sounds fun. We got to get Bryce on the show some night.
I'm working on that. I'm getting to a point where there's a little place where he can jump into the stream, and I wanted to get that done and introduce him to the audience, to the national, international audience on Head On. We're also streaming through every Sunday morning through unreportednews.net and on Sarge's show, and people are calling in and talking about what it's like down here, and he had a real good caller, somebody who blew the whistle on the FEMA, the CDC stuff. And Jesse was on the air Sunday, and I thought, oh God, that's great. We need to anchor next week's show around Jesse and have the community call in. So it's going to be a pretty good show on Sarge's show on Sunday morning. But things are just going along. I mean,
you're down there in FEMA land, Kate, and ELO, our moderator extraordinaire in the chat room, just posted something that I find mind-blowing. Let me just share this real quick. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, and, you know, feel free to scream whenever the spirit moves you. The Federal Emergency Management Agency misspent millions of dollars it received from selling used travel trailers, government investigators have discovered. Instead of buying more trailers, like the law said they should, FEMA used more than $13 million toward fully loaded sport utility vehicles, travel expenses, and purchase card accounts. During its three-month review last summer, the Inspector General found that FEMA used some of the proceeds from trailer sales for tree removal services, agency decals and banners, and global positioning systems.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those folks, some of the folks that you deal with, still look up and go, yeah, where'd the money go?
Right. There's an interesting phenomenon going on down here. This is my second winter down here, and it's my third trip to the coast, and people have gotten to the point where it's almost like, well, don't come and take my trailer because there's no place else to go, and I'm too depressed to go. I talked to a couple people over in Jackson County this week, and the people I worked with in January haven't gotten anything done for them. And all one guy's got to do is take some paperwork to a fax machine and fax Jackson for the Mississippi Center for Justice, and he can't even roll out his wheelchair and go do that. He's just frozen by inertia. So, and Bryce pointed out, he said he had to move out of his original trailer, and he was up across I-10 and up at the Emergency Operations Center, and he had to move out of that trailer and then move back down here where the station is, closer to the water and where his house was originally. And he said, when they took me, I had been in that trailer for 2 years, and when they kicked me out of the trailer, I'm not sure why, I don't remember why, but when they kicked me out of the trailer, it's like I just stuck my claws at the door jamb, and I didn't want to go. This had been my nest for 2 years. And now they put me down here in another trailer, and I had to move all the equipment and everything. And he said it's like people just kind of are frozen into their little holes, their little rat holes, and it's just kind of getting where after 2.5 years now, it's just too scary to move, you know. I mean, he said that everybody wants out of their trailer, but it's just a overwhelming project, just, you know, get, and everybody's waiting on their grants, and everybody's waiting on their property settlements, and everybody's waiting on the MEMA cottages that have to be elevated if you live on this block, and then if they live over there, you don't have to be. And I mean, the Hancock County hasn't even got the elevation maps out, and so people can't build until they know how high to build, you know, and so it's just a mess. And I drove around today down, I've been down here to Waveland before last January and a year ago, and it was pretty awful, and it's still pretty awful. So you find a brand new house that's just been built, and it's all shiny and spiffy, and a big old Suburban sitting out in the big old concrete driveway, and then next door the trash is still laying, the house is still just crumbled, and the trash is laying all over the lot, and it's just, you know, it's horrible. City of Waveland can't get the sewers up and running, and it's just it's pretty pitiful. So when I hear about Obama plagiarizing, I think, oh, whatever. It just doesn't matter. I just let you and Malloy rant, and I go, whatever. Stephanie Miller, whatever.
I know that, and I think I just threw up a little bit in the back of my throat. Yeah, and then
yeah, right. It's pretty. The other thing I'm doing that, you know, I had been working with like 58 people at one time, and then the next time I was working with about 28 people in five counties in an agency that was that needed to be have a lot of administrative work done on it, and finished up that job, and then went and got arrested up at Camp Kate up by Tupelo, and then I came back down here, and I just decided I'm really sick of the endless heart-rending just mess, and having to deal with so many people and not able to get anything done. And I thought, I'm just going to come here and do one person. And the most obvious thing to me to do right away was where the house had been torn down all the way. Excuse me, I don't have a cross button.
That's all right.
There's a lot of he's an engineer extraordinaire, as many people have said, and he saved components and VCRs and old Commodore keyboards and stuff. I mean, just transmitters and transmitters and testers and just stuff, you know, electronic stuff all over. Well, all those stuff was in boxes and peanut butter jars and stuff. He could fix just about anything that anybody would bring to him. But when the house flooded, clear to the second floor, and then melted, and then you'll see it on the webpage, all of that stuff had to be saved because you can save some stuff, and you can't put the lead and the solder in the landfill, and the copper can be saved for recycling, and, you know, so there's this pile out at the end of the wheelchair ramp that just needed to be sorted through, and I thought, well, what I can do is just do, rather than saving somebody, getting somebody's sheetrock in their house and the black mold mitigated, I can just not, I can help not put lead in, the buried lead in the earth, and that will be lasting for a million years rather than somebody who's going to die in 5 or 10 years anyway from black mold and skin rash and the government genocide and, So I'm just broadening my scope. I'm just out here picking up little pieces, little bitty, what are they called? Processor things, processor cards. I don't know.
Oh yeah, sure. Oh, there's lots of cards.
Little green things that have solder on the back of them.
Sure, lots of those.
Oh, they're all over, and then we had a big rain not long ago, and it washed up a whole bunch more. I looked around and thought, I just cleaned this driveway up, and everything floated to the top again, so it's going to be a long time. But then I do data entry, and then I don't answer the phone, and I go in and stick. They do a two-hour program every morning, and I go in and get the little kitchen. They're living in the FEMA. He's living in the FEMA trailer, and so I go in and sit down at the little table and watch him and an old guy. Chuck is a ham. This is also a ham station, and they do the broadcast and the news and the announcements and the citywide stuff and every morning, and it's interesting to watch how the broadcast goes out over the air and stuff, and I offer a little bit of critiquing at the end, and, you know, sometimes it's well received and other times it isn't, and the phone wasn't working. Oh, I sat through a tornado. He's the weather station here, and he has all those fancy weather maps and satellite stuff and whatever, and this is like government property, you know, I mean, he's got all the everything, the 130-foot tower and the antennas for everything and blah, blah, and
7-second delay.
No, actually, we got hooked up to the phones yet, and he said it's going to be about a 40-second delay. And I said, ooh.
Well, that's what we've got here, but we just don't use it, so.
Oh, okay. So, there was a storm warning. He always checks in on the air every night about 6 o'clock, and the weather's clear and stuff. Or we're going to have weather in the morning at Sunday morning. And so Saturday night, we started getting ready for the tornado watch and stuff and that big front that came out of Texas. So we're up about 4:30 or 5 o'clock, and I thought, I'm not going to sit out here, lay out here in my truck on my bunk. I'm going to go in the trailer, and, you know, if we get blown away, that'll be whatever. And I sat for 12 hours in a FEMA trailer doing severe weather and storm warnings and tracking the tornadoes and warning people, like, you know, it's coming in, it's going to be there in 4 minutes to this town, and that, you know, that get to a shelter. You know, if you've got a neighbor, go to their house, invite somebody over for breakfast because this is going to go on till 9 o'clock. 12 hours we sat during severe storm tornado watch, blah blah, in the FEMA trailer, and it's just pitiful. I mean, God, it wasn't scary. I mean, I love big storms, but we didn't get hit, but we got a little rain, but it was interesting to watch the whole process, to watch the emergency operations center in operation. It was just very cool. So, anyway, yeah, I'm learning more than I ever wanted to learn, but, and we didn't have telephone for, he hasn't had phone, it's snowy lines, really bad lines, and I said, can't the head of the emergency center call, and can't, who do you call, and the phone company and say, this is a critical station. We need to have phone. We've tried that. Rudy doesn't have any power. There's nothing that can be done. And I scream, don't tell me there's nothing that can be done. And they went, ooh, and kind of left the trailer and went outside after the program was over. And I called the phone company and told them that I'm an advocate for, I'm affiliated with Mississippi Protection and Advocacy, and I am just sitting here at this radio station that's run completely by differently abled people, and it's a critical weather station, and I sat in a 12-hour tornado watch in a FEMA trailer with no telephone, no contact, the public could not contact the radio station, and we need to have something done now. Oh, yes, ma'am, we're from Denver. She says, we'll put a trace on the line and somebody will be out by 6 o'clock. We had phones at 4:30 yesterday afternoon. Yay.
Indeed. Take your victories where you can find them.
Throwing my weight around. I did call my colleague over in Jackson County and say, am I still loosely affiliated? She said, honey, you can be whatever you want to be. I'm just doing the little detail stuff around here that he just is burned out and doesn't have time to do. But we definitely need to get him on the air because it's a real interesting story. And if people would first go to the website so they know who, you know, they get an idea of how, there's some really good video on the website too. So if people would just go to the WQRZ website and check the videos and read up some of the information, the narrative on there that would give people an idea. And then I'll introduce him to you some afternoon before airtime, and we can get him on for a while, and people can call in and ask questions and stuff. So it'll be very cool. He's not streaming yet. That's another piece of equipment that got fried in a lightning storm, so he's not able to stream the audio out of the station yet over the air, over the internet. So we will work. thought I'd check in and give your voice a rest at least. And it's good to have you back on the air. And sorry that Agnes and the kid are still sick, but at least nobody got critical, huh?
Not yet. Agnes is on her dose of Cipro, and I try to make sure that she's taking it and hope for the best. And yeah.
Right. Yeah, I told Bryce that Friday. I said
I'm really looking forward to spring.
Well, why?
Just to get outside in fresh air, and because you know that's part of that. During the cold weather months up here, I think that facilitates the sort of swirling nature of the diseases that roll around the public schools and then come home.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because they get into the ventilation system and everybody sneezes and there are school systems all around the country that have been, you know, 50% absenteeism with the flu that's going around.
Oh really? Oh.
I know a couple of school systems were down for the day that I've read stories about. Because half the kids and most of the teachers are gone.
Yeah. Well, something strange this way comes. Is that lurching toward Bethlehem? Slouching toward Bethlehem, yeah. Oh, God. Don't start, Kate. I know, everybody's rolling their eyes. There she goes. Don't start. So I'm going to let you go, and I just wanted to welcome you back on the air and let everybody know what's going on down here in Waveland, Mississippi. We need volunteers. We need volunteers. Anybody who wants to take winter vacation and come to Mississippi, we need volunteers. There's a volunteer center where you can stay just right around about 4 blocks from here. A lot of churches have tents and camps and stuff that are really well accommodated and, you know, they have good food and showers and stuff like that. So anybody wants to take a winter vacation, you're welcome to come on down. We can use anything, anybody. If you've got a warm body and you're upright and can feed yourself without help, you're certainly welcome. I mean, I'd even feed you, but you have to be able to spoon your own face or whatever. So I just want to go and I heard you say you had a couple of callers on the line, so I'm holding somebody up. I hope they're not on a cell phone, too.
If they're still there. People don't show patience with me, so yeah.
Well, yeah, but if they're on the 800 line, then they're just holding.
Right, they're trying not to run the nickel up. I understand that. Yeah.
All right.
Kate,
right.
Stay safe and call back when you've learned about STLs.
About what?
STLs. That's another one of those. Yeah.
Sam, Tom, Lima.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of those fun terrestrial radio things.
Okay, I have something to look forward to.
I don't know. Maybe Bryce doesn't have one, but.
Okay, he's got everything else. He's probably, if I mention it, he'll probably.
I got a feeling if you say, show me another new gizmo, you can do that for probably another 5 or 10 years.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. Oh, God, they're laying all over. I mean, it's the station's in a FEMA trailer, the little camper, not, you know, like the one, no bedroom, just front. Middle kitchen, middle bathroom, bedroom, bed in the back, that's it. That's the theme. And the station's all up at the front by the hitch, and it's all across the front of the... Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal down here.
It's got to be.
STL, huh? I'll get a man right on it. So I'll check in when I've got a...
Or get a woman right on it and get it done right.
We just finished chainsawing a bunch of trees down, Peter. I don't know if you're listening or not, but the guy who, Tony, the volunteer who came here, who's a friend, has a pretty green chainsaw, and they just ripped up a whole bunch of trees, and I sat here thinking about Peter all evening.
Let's see, green. That would be a Poland, wouldn't it?
Yeah, right.
Because orange is Husqvarna. And your reds are generally home lights or steels.
Yeah, Black and Decker.
How big a bar?
I don't know. It was 24 inches, maybe. I don't know. nice little chainsaw. Anyway, I will stay in touch when I got more to talk about and less time to do it in. So,
all right.
See you later.
Take care, Kate.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And let's see who we've got here. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob, a Rebop.
Hey, Juanita, what's happening?
I listened to your rerun, I guess it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple of comments about something I heard on there.
Sure.
Two things.
I'm not even sure which rerun it was. I haven't exactly been in my right mind lately.
Well, some I hadn't heard the whole show, and it was one of the clips you had on was about the cop that giving the kids a hard time about.
Oh yeah, the Salvatore Ravelli of the Inner Harbor Police Force in Baltimore. Yes.
Yeah. So I
cop in the bumblebee suit.
I looked up on YouTube and found it, and you know what? There's been a rush on that all over the country.
A lot of views?
More cops doing kids like that. One of them even had to be taken out on a gurney in some place.
It's not surprising. In a police state, that happens.
But, you know, and I was talking to my son about it, and I said, what are they going to do? You know, how are they going to find anybody any better than that? You know, some of the people that they have. I've had experience, and, you know, you wouldn't think I would. I've had some bad experience with police and also lawyers. And it's kind of like this, like, hey, we can do her any way we want to. And it's not that I've been on the wrong side of the law. I've never been on the wrong side of the law officially. Or any other way that I know of, and it's like I'm always treated like I'm in the wrong. And now I have met some nice police, and I haven't met any nice lawyers yet, but except our friend Mark.
He's a nice lawyer, but
yes,
then again, you would not want to be on the stand getting cross-examined by Mark Levine.
Oh Lord, no! I've learned that.
Because
I've learned to appreciate that guy. I'm telling you,
Mark,
I really am glad.
Mark can pick apart gestures. You know, Mark can pick apart breathing patterns.
But the other thing I wanted to talk about was you were also, I think, on the same show talking about what and Susan was talking about the swinging, you know, the nooses.
Yes.
That What's-His-Face brought up.
Right.
That may be the best
name yet for George Bush. What's-His-Face, Juanita? That's just beautiful, because that demonstrates the depth of irrelevance that the man has reached.
Oh Lord and mercy, it's just more and more ridiculous all the time. But the one thing that when I was listening to Radio Left, and when they had David Tavitt on there,
mm-hmm.
he was telling about that he was working in some way. You know, the guy that got drugged to death.
Yeah.
Out there, and the family, the daughter. You know, they were trying to pass the hate crime law in Texas.
Right.
And Bush was against it. And they went up there with the daughter, one of the daughters, and they gave her, I don't know how, just a few minutes. And he sat there. The girl was crying, and she was, you know, weeping. And he sat there and just looked at her, stony-faced, didn't offer her a Kleenex or nothing, didn't say a word. And then, you know, when he was running for president, he was bragging about that he had kept that law to pass. Well, it passed without him. And I guess he just didn't veto it or something. But she sat there, you know, she was like a teenager. And, you know, that family, they were so wonderful. You know, they didn't want anybody to cause any trouble about it. I mean, they were real Christians, in my opinion, the way they acted, if anybody remembers that. Because you had the Ku Klux Klan down there, they were going to start something, and you had, I guess, the black Muslims, and they were there, you know, and I don't know that they were going to really, but they were there to protect, I suppose. I think they get a bad rap, but anyway, that's what it brought to my mind about how much he doesn't care about much, you know. He has no compassion whatsoever. He doesn't know what compassion means.
Right. Yeah, sure.
But that I was thinking, yeah, you're talking about that. He's trying to, wasn't it that, minister that was, I think it was Jackson, was talking about how they're going to try to change history for him at the Methodist church or something?
Yeah.
On Peter's show.
Yeah. Yeah, and what was it? Reverend,
I heard that on rerun too, because I had missed it.
And that was a brilliant conversation, and it's absolutely true.
That was
the whole purpose of that dog and pony show at SMU is going to be, and you're absolutely right in what he said. They are going to the whole purpose of that phony little policy center is going to be to rewrite the history of the Bush administration until it's all lollipops and merry-go-rounds.
Well, that's why he's so sure that that history's going to be kind to him, because he knows they're going to rewrite it.
Yeah.
But some of the things I've seen, little spots of news about him overseas, and they asked him about the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And was he going to do anything about somebody spying? I'm not making much sense, because I just get little snatches.
No, I'm following you.
But he was said, that's just, that's just a game, that's just games or something like that. And I mean, and then they asked him about, wasn't the war causing us to have, financial hardships over here? And he said, no. He said, if anything, it's happened, He said, we're not having, I couldn't believe this guy. Oh, Lord of mercy, I'll tell you.
I know. I just wish he'd stay there. I just stay in Africa, George. We'll send Mr. Stanley after you when it's time to find you. But no.
Was that his name, Stanley?
Well, Stanley and Livingston, remember? Dr. Livingston,
oh,
I presume.
Oh, yeah. there's no telling. They've got so many tricks up their sleeves. There's no telling what they're going
to do. Well, it takes a lot of nerve to go to Africa to announce that you're cutting funds for AIDS treatment in Africa. You got to admit there's a lot of brass involved there.
And no birth control.
Oh, heck no, because that's demonic.
He kills me when he says, go out and do something to help somebody, Like nobody's ever thought about that before. People have been helping people way before he ever thought about it,
Sure.
He
nature of the process.
So mixed up and thinks that he's come up with something new. Like he says, love somebody like you would love yourself, He's just, I don't know, he's just so twisted.
He's a moron.
And
the word you're looking for is moron.
but he's our moron, ain't he?
I reckon, but... Oh.
Sad to say. I don't know. I'm not making any sense. I think I'll shut up.
Juanita, you take care, dear.
Huh?
You take care.
You too, and I'm glad you're better. And I've been through some of those things you were talking about, that washout and all. I've been through a lot of that stuff, and it seems to never stop.
I'm afraid that when it stops, the ride's over. So I guess I'm just
maybe
lucky that it happens.
That's our lot in life,
That's our bear to cross, Juanita.
Yeah. Well, you take care.
You too. Bye now.
Bye night.
Okay, and lots of lots more fun coming in the next hour. Maybe we'll do a little walking through the media cesspool. That's always a blast. Let's see. A little something to play, just to give me a minute or two to regenerate my... See, I'm getting Clint Eastwood-y. You can hear it, can't you? Yeah, that'll work. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be right back. Your phone calls, of course, are always welcome. 304-658-3333 or toll free 877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
Here's Buck.
4 minutes past the hour. Here we go again. A quick email in. More descriptions of the tech nightmares of Bob Kincaid. But let's put it this way. We use a different machine to stream out live stuff than we do the rerun stream. And the laptop... See, when the computer crashed, I lost my email. Fortunately, I had it loaded on the laptop, too. So I'm holding the laptop in my arms right now because I had a little email roll in. This from our buddy Tom out in California. Welcome back, Bob. That's what you get for flying. You know, I had that thing, that same thought go through my head, wondering if I, if maybe it wasn't the kids bringing this in from the viral cesspool. I've had more stories from more people saying, you know, I got home from flying and I just got sick as a dog. I don't know. Maybe it's like the crud that lives on all the surfaces on the cruise ships. Anyway, Tom says, well, you scooped him again. Yesterday and today, the media are all over the slaughterhouse story. Over the last few weeks, I've been becoming more convinced that it's not so much that this isn't America anymore, so much that perhaps it never was America, or at least not the America we or I always thought it was. Yeah, it kind of reminds you of that Langston Hughes poem, doesn't it? That's why I dredged that one up. I've been reading Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, says Tom. Yeah, that's always a good idea. It certainly lends credence to that thought. Some of my ancestors came from England on the Mayflower, no less. Some from Scotland, some from Germany in the 1880s. They all left their home countries for a better chance for their children. Looking at history, it appears to me that things almost never get better before they get much, much worse than they are here and now. Perhaps 1932 was an exception, although if right now we're in about the same situation as 1928, well, things got pretty bad. People who left Germany in 1938 sure did better than those who stayed. I'd be interested to hear what other hornistas think. Ooh, hornistas, another word. Cool. Take it easy on your voice. I'll slurp a Ricola for you. Ricola! Oh, don't do that, Bob. The voice will be gone before we know it. So now I have to set the laptop back down. Where did I hear the story? May have been on our rerun stream. I think it was maybe listening to Guy's rerun that I heard the story about the fact that Americans, it used to be that because we were so well fed and because we had such a high protein diet, Americans were the tallest people on average on Earth. We've lost that. And that says something. Says something rather profound. Probably has to do with the industrialization of the food grid. But, no. Look, we are staring squarely in the face, and it's the kind of thing that makes me not sleep very well at night, and the same thing goes for Agnes, even when she's feeling good, which she isn't. We are staring squarely in the eye the fact that we may not hand off a better standard of living to our kids than what we had ourselves. Which has been the steady progress of the United States, for the most part, regardless of all of our other shortcomings. And that's disturbing. Somehow or another, it ties in with this business of Brit Hume. You know, what a jerk. Fox News' E.D. Hill asked Brit Hume to explain what Michelle Obama meant by her recent comments. Let's just hear the audio. Maybe. Yeah, here we go.
Watched politics for a long time and listened to a lot of stupid things that politicians have said. Today, everyone is analyzing, trying to figure out what in the world Michelle Obama meant when she said, I kind of thought it was one of these hastily worded, you know, statements kind of jumbled out there. But it's very deliberately worded and slowly said, I have never...
The word you're looking for, honey, is enunciated, okay? Not slowly said. But I don't think they're worrying about the way she talks. I mean, you should see the camera angles. woman's apparently got legs clean up to her earlobes.
Never been proud of America, really, until now.
Yeah, she's the first time she said in her, I guess, adult life she'd been proud of America.
What does that mean?
Well,
here it comes. Now, back up. Michelle Obama said for the first time that she was proud of America. What? Michelle Obama's not that much older than me? What does America have to be proud of in the 45... I'm just using me as the benchmark, okay? I'll come to the phones in a second. Let's just analyze this perhaps it would be because of the way things get twisted by the mainstream media. No, by the so-called professional media. There we go. It would be better not said. But at the tender age of 45, my life began about 10 months before the murder of John Kennedy. We had, within the first decade of my existence, the murder of John Kennedy, the murder of Martin Luther King, the murder of Bobby Kennedy, the loss of some 55,000 battlefield deaths in Vietnam, and that's just the American side, never mind the peasants that John McCain bombed and others like him, that tallied up to well over a million Vietnamese people, you know, their country, their land. We got the landing on the moon. Okay, well, yeah, okay, maybe you could. I was proud of that when I watched it when I was 6 years old. The whole Nixon administration, Watergate. Maybe you could be proud of the fact that there was once a Congress that had even members of the president's own party who were willing to say, look, you know, you can't do what you did, Mr. Nixon, and stay president. Was that something to be proud of? You've got the rampant inflation that was created by the Vietnam War and the Nixon administration, passed off to the Ford administration, and which was subsequently saddled on the Carter administration and Jimmy Carter personally as his fault. You've got the Reagan administration, the slaughter of tens and hundreds of thousands of innocents in Central America as a direct and proximate result of Reagan administration policies. You got that. You've got the raping of organized labor and the ripping off of pension plans. You've got the first Bush administration. You've got a collapse of the stock market backing up in 87. You've got a stupid little war in Panama, stupid little war in Grenada, a really dumbass war, the first Bush war in the Middle East. We did have 8 years of peace and prosperity with Bill Clinton, which no matter how hard people just try to retroactively look back and hate Bill Clinton, remains true. But that was tempered by the horrific mistake of permanent most favored nation status to China and the passage of NAFTA and GATT and the WTO. And then you've got 8 years of George W. Bush. And frankly, in that list, there ain't just a hell of a lot to be proud of now, is there? So I can understand the motivation for Michelle Obama saying this, if not the bad judgment involved in actually saying it. But no, that's not what this is about. This is about giving Brit Hume an opportunity to get his maiden forms all in a twist and have a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy on the air. And he's going to explain to us what it meant when Michelle Obama said what she said. And you're not going to like it.
It means that she is a liberal, and maybe an arch liberal. And it raises questions about whether he agrees with her. I mean, we're not going to elect a spouse here, so that ought to be said right up.
So does that wash it out, or does it really matter?
No, because I think, you know, then he needs to answer and say what he thinks of that. Is this, I mean, for example, what...
It means she's a liberal, maybe a hard liberal. Because, you know, liberals hate America. I would submit that maybe it means that we take a look at a country that we love and try to isolate its faults so that those faults can be corrected. Because when you walk through your little Tinkerbell world like Britt Hume does, and you just have to clap and America will be Tinkerbell again, yay! Oh, Tinkerbell will live if you only clap harder, Fox Watchers! Then the problems don't get solved, and you wind up with homeless veterans who do live under bridges standing outside Fox headquarters saying, "Ah, we'd like to talk to Mr. O'Reilly. We're the Vietnam veterans who live under the bridge that he says don't exist." And you just ignore the problem, and Tinkerbell is happy. But there's more.
Was he proud when the first President Bush ran Saddam Hussein's army out of Kuwait? Was he proud when...
Yeah, because that was a fraud.
The United States went to the rescue and did all that our Navy and other military forces did for the tsunami victims. Was he proud then? Indeed, one might ask her, you sure you weren't proud then as well? But I think this was something that she kind of thinks. There is this feeling.
Here it comes.
It has affected Democratic politicians for a long time that they are kind of embarrassed by patriotism.
Now that the Republicans have made clear that waterboarding is not torture, I would like to waterboard Britt Hume. And I would like to ask him how patriotic he felt every time we brought him up for air. I'd like to lay out the list of the dead, the blood that is on Ronald Reagan's corpse that flows down daily over the first George Bush like that really icky scene from Carrie. Proud of it, Brit? Bloop. Proud of it, Brit? Proud? Because now that Antonin Scalia and John McCain, and a whole bunch of right-wing repig-licking senators, and right-wing members of the House, repig-lickens all, now that they've decided that, by their words and their deeds and their actions, that waterboarding isn't torture, I think that kind of means that waterboarding isn't a crime. So I think it's open season on Republicans for waterboarding. Glenn Beck, into the drink! Michael Savage, down you go! Flush Flimball, oh, you're getting a swirly, buddy! Flush! We're embarrassed by patriotism. No, Britt, you darn jackass. We're embarrassed by jingoism, because you expect that in sick, twisted, little banana dictatorship, tin pot. Not us. We're supposed to be better than that. But not in the world of Britt Hume and Fox News. Guess Britt Hume never heard of the April Glaspie memo, but oh well. To the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Luke.
Yeah, you're on a good one there. The thing about the first Gulf War is no one ever bothers to mention that fact that Kuwaiti was doing this thing called slant drilling.
Oh, no, and they don't mention the fact that those neonatal units just chock full of tortured Kuwaiti babies couldn't possibly have existed.
And the fact that the poor nurse that had to come up there and testify that when they tried to subpoena her to come back to talk, she activated her diplomatic immunity as a member of the Kuwaiti royal family.
Oopsie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, have you noticed also this week, we're on the media, let's play on them for a while, but amazingly enough, like you say, now all of a sudden, John McCain thinks waterboarding's just fine. So where are some stories about the flip-flops and John McCain and the Double Talk Express?
And seldom is heard. You can finish the rest. I'm not singing so good.
But, it's one of those things that, it's just like I say, if anybody turns on the TV, like I say, from now on, and you want to watch news, just remember now who these people are that you're listening to. These are the same people that in 2000, 2004, you know, lied, changed stories, did anything they could to make a Democrat look bad. And these are the people you're expecting to hear truth out of. You know, I every time I turn on and see Chris Matthews' face, the first thing I want to do is beat the TV to death, but I don't do that. But at least I said
Not even when they're talking about Barack Obama and showing a picture of Osama bin Laden behind Chris Matthews' head? Not even then, Luke?
Oh, I tell you what. Well, you look at...
You're aware of that, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but just remember, this is the group that in 2000, you know, told every lie they could about Al Gore, and to this day, I've never heard one of them apologize. I've never heard of one of them getting fired. You know, I mean, they thought that was just fine. It's okay that, you know, we ran stories where they changed his words in his speeches. But that was okay.
Oh, yeah, that's just fine.
You know, it's like the biggest, and I'm sorry to do this, but the biggest problem I have right now, and I'm sorry to put it this way, is that I see in the right now in the Democratic primary the exact same thing I saw in the 2000 general election. We have one candidate who the press loves, who they cannot say enough about, and if you say something bad about you, you're banned from TV. Have you noticed how you have not seen a fellow named Paul Krugman on TV lately?
No, he's been disappeared. He's off to the gulag.
You know, and Joe Connison, you know, anybody that asks any hard questions of Mr. Obama is now apparently persona non grata. You know, you can't be on TV because you dared ask a question. You went away from the script. We have a script there for you, and if you don't follow that script, we're going to throw you off, and you can't come back on. And, you know, and it's one of these things.
But is that, Luke, let me ask.
Yeah.
Is that going to last?
Oh, no. The funny part I saw last night was I turned over on to, I just want to see who he had on. Larry King had a whole bunch of people on, you know, talk. And one of them he had on, and I can't think of where, I've seen her before, but I can't think of who she does works for, is a lady named Lynn Sweet. And she was sitting there going, you know, after we get past the primaries, well, then we'll look into some of this stuff. And I'm sitting there going, look, you're sitting there saying, we want, the people are trying to make a choice, and you say, well, we can't look into that person until after they make the choice.
Well, I know.
We want you to make a blindfold choice, then we'll tell you if you made a good choice or not.
Right, and I mean, you can almost hear the it makes you feel like you can feel the marbles rattling inside your own skull when you hear that kind of thing. Just
yeah, we'll tell you if you made a good choice or not. You know, it's like you know, to this day, okay, if you want one good this year, just remember, essentially the Democratic primary was a 3-person race, and then they froze the 3rd person out because they didn't want a 3-person race. You know, they came out of Iowa.
But now they're freezing the 2nd person out too.
Oh yeah.
Because Hillary Clinton is beginning to get the Edwards Kucinich treatment.
Oh yeah. And the thing of it is, the thing that I think, and I'm sorry it's going to be this way, but I think the Obama people are going to be in for that nice little rude awakening, because they apparently think that once they get the magic, they're the Democratic candidate, that everybody's supposed to play nice now. And I'm sitting there going, what? What color is the sky on your planet? I'm curious. How many moons do you see at night?
As long as this goes on, Luke, it just gives the Republican Repiglican National Committee more time to drag the long knives down across the wet block. And you and me being Southern folk, we understand that.
Well, as I say, I keep on writing them. They don't ever use my letter, and that's fine. But I keep writing them. I say, you know, I'm from Tennessee. Remember 2 years ago, the Harold Ford election that you think you've seen racism? Oh, you ain't seen it yet. It's like, say, most of these people are like, well, they'll play fair, you know, they're trying to say, well, it's going to be a good race. They're sitting there going, wait a minute, you're the same people that 6 or 8 months ago, wasn't there this story about some fellow on radio whose name we won't mention was doing the story about Barack Obama, the magic Negro?
Yep. And of course,
and
you know, Jordan
wasn't even a warm-up.
And George over in Africa, of course, is just charming, because somebody asked him about Obamamania, or whatever we want to call it.
Yeah.
And after a while, he got a little frustrated. He said, wait a minute. This is, and he started channeling David Spade from the Emperor's New Groove.
God.
Wait a minute. This is about me. Hey, it's about me. Stop talking about him.
But, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, like I said, that's the biggest problem I have right now with this primary is it resembles the 2000 election. I mean, you have one candidate who can do no wrong, who apparently, the other thing that bugs me is, you know, we're hearing Barack saying he's a candidate of big ideas. He doesn't worry about the little details. I hate to tell you, we're coming up on the eighth year of a candidate who doesn't like the details, who just talks in big ideas.
Yeah.
I want a wonk.
I want a geek.
That's what I mean. I want a wonk who knows every subject backwards and forwards. You know what I mean?
And can get along on 2 or 3 hours sleep a night.
That's what I mean. I want somebody who's up till 2 in the morning before they even think about going to bed. I don't want somebody who's already in bed at 8 o'clock. You know, I want somebody who worries about this stuff because it worries the hell out of me. You know, it's one of these things, you know, it's like, say, we had a choice in 2000 between somebody who had no clue to what he was doing and the other guy who probably knew every issue forward and backwards better than probably except for the guy he would be replacing. You know, between the two of them, it would have been a fight to know who probably knew it better. And we got a guy who has memory loss. That's probably his greatest accomplishment, is he has a whole lot of memory loss.
It's about the whole lot of
it. He feels no guilt.
Hey, let me run one past you. I had to leave the air just as the bug was kicking me in the butt. And right as McCain was declaring that waterboarding was just fine by him. That, of course, was to get in the good graces of Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter. I don't know if it worked or not. But if I was the Majority Leader of the United States Senate, tell me what you think of this idea. And I wanted to drive this point home because I was, in fact, a real honest-to-God Democrat and not a stealth Republican like Harry Reid actually is. I would introduce a bill a week and fast-track it. And I would introduce that bill banning the United States from doing bamboo under fingernails, and make and in essence everything that we knew was done to John McCain in Hanoi, I would introduce a bill banning the United States military, the CIA, or anyone of, by, or for the United States from doing it, and I would make John McCain vote on everything that was done to him by the Vietnamese. And I would make him stand up and declare it's okay if America does it.
But you know what? It's one of those things where, did you see this? I saw this fact over this past weekend, and this is a fact that will blow your mind. I didn't realize it was this bad. Of the three of our candidates, our main candidates right now, Hillary Clinton has missed, theoretically, about 26% of the votes. Okay?
Yeah.
Barack Obama has missed, I think it was 34% of the votes. Guess how many John McCain has missed?
55, 60?
55.
I'm good.
But you know what I mean? Isn't that a fact that, you know, you're sitting there going, "What? Where is this? You know, where is this thing being talked
Why
about?
Why couldn't she show up for the telecom vote?
I don't know. Oh, that's another thing. I got not the vote, but I tell you, that's another thing that I really want somebody out there talking about. Now, I know the economy is the big thing right now. And I know you probably never get it on the air. I want to see at the next election, at the next debate, this one they got coming up. I want somebody to ask them, what are you going to do about the FCC? You know, are we going to break up the big telecoms? I wonder if CNN will go to color bars.
No, it'll be the really old fashioned one with the Indian in the headdress at the top. That's what they'll go to.
I want to know how far down in FEMA you're going to fire everybody. I mean, because like I say, you know, I know they just had this thing a week or so ago now where they've had a whole bunch of other trailers that, my golly, I didn't realize we have such a surplus of formaldehyde. Can we sell this to somebody?
I know.
We can put it in every damn thing, apparently.
Look, it's probably in the... We know there's silicone in the shredded mozzarella cheese at Pizza Hut, okay? God knows where the formaldehyde is, Luke.
I tell you what, it's getting to this point. I ain't going to have to worry about losing weight because I'm to the point now I don't trust damn eat anything there is out there now. Here we are. I recall about half the meat in America.
In all seriousness, here's the rule of thumb. If it's frozen meat, mm-hmm. or if it is meat cooked inside a product in a can, don't touch it.
Well, the other thing about that is then I'm wondering about, you know, how are we going to know, since, of course, they aren't going to put labels on, how are we going to, I think we must have to go meatless, because I tell you what, I don't know if I want to trust having cloned meat.
There's that.
You've been eating that for 25 years, now we're telling you it's rotten you from the inside.
But the beautiful thing is it's also an empowering moment for the growing decentralization of the food industry.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're probably in an area, Luke, where if you did a little bit of looking, you could get locally raised, locally killed meat, and you start making some inquiries, and you might find out that it's more available than you think. I just happened to find out that I got a neighbor out the road that grass feeds his beef, doesn't corn him, doesn't antibiotic him, keeps him nice and healthy. And, you know, he's reasonable.
Well, I say you can check. I tell you, the place that you really want to check is some of these guys that the people who hunt.
You've
got these small little, not only butcher shops per se, but the ones that, you know, that dress out meat, things like that for hunters. Because they do a lot of that, do a lot of sausage and things like that. So, you know.
Yeah, but it's if we can trend America back toward localism in its food supply, mm-hmm. we will go a long way toward curing these ills. Because whether it's a slaughterhouse or a butcher shop or a farmer, if his product is staying local, then he has a hell of a lot higher incentive to keep it clean.
Oh yeah. But you know what I mean? I tell you what, it's got to the point now. I was sitting here thinking about something the other day. The stuff with Chris Matthews and all this stuff. It's like, what other profession would you still have this guy still have a job? I mean, if you did this in any other profession, you wouldn't. They wouldn't let you back in the building to collect your things.
This is astonishing. After all the mistakes that have been made, you would think that people would be paying attention. But there sits Chris Matthews in the mighty anchor chair, and he's saying, what did Barack Obama say, and why is it causing controversy? Well, we'll take a look at that fight, the fight that erupted today over something Barack said on the campaign trail. And behind him is a picture of Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm. Or if you set, usually when I'm at work, I'll turn on, check the CNN site, and I'll go over their politics thing, and I'll see what Jack Cafferty's questions are for the day, just for the fun of it. You know, see what's coming up.
Yeah.
And if you go back over the last 2 months, almost every question he has is directed at Hillary Clinton. I mean, I don't see any directed at Barack Obama. I don't see any directed at John McCain.
I don't think McCafferty that Cafferty could ever be qualified as a Democrat.
Oh no.
But inside the Democratic Party itself, Luke, it's serious business going after John McCain. He has got to be fully and completely discredited before he ever gets to his own convention.
Well, if I say I don't want to hear the word maverick ever mentioned about him again, he is not a maverick.
Oh, he's so not a maverick. And in fact, our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com. Addressed that very issue just the other day. You're going to love this. sorry, throat's still on the mend. He writes, the maverick John McCain, quotes. And then Eugene says, I really don't think that Senator McCain is smooth as a handle on a gun, wild as a wind in Oregon. Furthermore, he actually looks more like Strother Martin than James Garner. Lawyer Daggett. She draws that Lawyer Daggett like a gun. No, I love Strother Martin. What we have here is failure to communicate. The Mavericks brothers, Brett and Bart, were a pair of wily, charming con artists. You could see how they belong in politics. Could you imagine John McCain as a riverboat gambler, perhaps betting 100 years on a victory in Iraq? I think someone would call that bluff. Perhaps Senator McCain might be better cast in one of the other classic, or at least ancient, television westerns. For instance, there's Have Gun, Will Travel, which sounds like the Republican foreign policy. In that series, Richard Boone played the 19th century equivalent of a business consultant, except that he had a six-shooter instead of an MBA. Boone's character, the black-garbed paladin, was a man of refinement. He always knew an appropriate Shakespearean quote when gunning you down. Unfortunately, Mr. McCain is more inclined to cite the Beach Boys or Alan Greenspan. Furthermore, the eloquence niche already is occupied by another man in black, Senator Obama. The marshal in Gunsmoke is the strong, silent type. Just the massive physical presence of James Arness's Matt Dillon could intimidate and tame the Wild West. Surely he could do the same in the wild Middle East. During the 300 years it was on television, Gunsmoke always relied on the same actors for character roles and villains, so Harold J. Stone would play Israel, Victor French would be Iraq, and Bruce Dern would be Iran. Dillon's discreet relationship with the town madam would fit the Republican approach to corporate ethics, so John McCain would want to be thought of as Marshal Dillon. We just have to ignore the more obvious resemblance to Deputy Festus Hagen. Festus was cantankerous, volatile, and stubborn. He was illiterate, but would neither admit it nor remedy it. In small doses, Festus could be amusing, but for an entire episode, he would be stupefying. And for an entire administration, terrifying. And haven't we just had 7 years of Festus Hagen anyway? Perhaps, and this is where it gets really good, perhaps Bonanza would offer Senator McCain just the right stereotype. Of course, he can't be Ben Cartwright. The role of the paternal god figure has been reserved exclusively for Ronald Reagan. The role of Adam Cartwright would be completely inappropriate. Adam was the token intellectual, cool, aloof, and so miserably out of place he probably read the New York Times aloud to his horse. Yes, he was too obviously a Democrat to be John McCain. The Republican senator could aspire to be Hoss Cartwright, an ox's strength with a bovine mind, saintly and lovable, but Reverend Huckabee already has that role. Little Joe Cartwright is just Festus Hagen with a bath, and the niche of the disastrous goof is currently occupied. Nonetheless, Bonanza still offers one role appropriate and appealing for today's Republican candidate. Hop Singh, who may also be the son of Ben Cartwright, is hardworking, competent, and affable. He ladles out whatever his employers tell him, and he does it with a smile. Our chief public servant might as well be servile. Given the balance of trade and the disintegrating American economy, the next American president will be the Hop Singh for China. So forget the theme song for Maverick. Our number is Happy Trails. Eugene's a genius.
I don't know. It could be Rawhide. I think he'd do much better as the fellow, you know, drove the chuck wagon. You know?
Yeah, there's that. As far as McCain's concerned, though, I favor the Slim Pickens character in Blazing Saddles. Daggone, Mr. Taggart, you use your tongue like a $20 whore. Yeah, I mean, didn't he say that to George Bush when he tolerated all that evil stuff that he said about him in the first campaign?
Well, you know, the thing that up till 2000, I had a low-level respect for John McCain. Okay. After 2000, I totally lost it when, as I've told you this before, when the RNC, Karl Rove, and they went after John McCain's daughter. They didn't go after John McCain. Now, John McCain, that's fine. He accepts he's a target. But when they go after your wife and they go after your daughter, and then the next thing that happens we see is there's John McCain with his arm around George Bush. And I'm sitting there going, they would have to about put the gun to my head to make me ever appear on stage with him again. And if they did, they'd have to have a gun on me because they'd be afraid I'd jump his ass. And explain to him what we used to call loading the boot.
Exactly.
And what we used to call a Tennessee dog whooping. You know what I mean? That's one of the things. To me, that's when I totally lost any respect I had for him, was when they went after his wife and his adopted daughter.
And he took it.
And he took it
and liked
smiled it. About it. It's like I say, I honestly would think that you could have had the best video moment in the world, because the next thing this time you'd have seen me, it'd have been when I showed up at a George Bush rally and beat the tar out of him and dared somebody to try to stop me. And I'd have told him, I'd have said, you attack me, that's fine. You touch my family, I'll drag you behind the Straight Talk Express.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, that wouldn't be nice.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, let me get off because I know you got more people who want to get on and talk.
Well, I'm just going to try to roll it on out toward the end. Thanks, Luke. Well, good to hear from you.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Luke in Knoxville, Tennessee. Our keen eye on the media. And I had to share that bit from Eugene Fetterman because it's so true. But really, Eugene, I know you're listening. It really is the Slim Pickens character from Blazing Saddles, trust me. Now, let's see, just a couple of things. I mentioned at the top of the program the admiration that I had for Keith Olbermann for calling George Bush a fascist. And I'm wondering, I'm beginning to wonder if Keith is trying to find how far he can push the envelope before he gets really jumped. Because in his Worst Person in the World, and I'm sure a lot of you watch it already, but it's still, you know, we got to praise people when they do things right. In his Worst Person in the World segment, Keith Olbermann gave the bronze to Ann Coulter for her repeated references to Senator Obama as B. Hussein Obama and President Hussein during an appearance on Fox News' Your World. But that wasn't all. That would be easy. Takes no courage to do that. But then Olbermann finishes up by saying, referring to an earlier appearance by Coulter on MSNBC, quote, then we put her on this network today so she could do it again. I admire that level of guts. I'd like to think that it's not pure grandstanding, because he is treading on very, very, very thin and dangerous ice at this point in time, Keith Olbermann is. Meanwhile, you may or may not have caught this. There's a lot of stuff that slid past me during the great flu bug. But Laura Ingraham, another right-wing attack blonde, referring to the visit by the Reverend Al Sharpton to the White House, saying of his appearance there, Sharpton's, I hope they nailed down all the valuables. And makes a ton of money for saying that stuff. I know, I don't mean to just wear out a theme or anything, but I constantly find myself scratching my head and wondering if the American people really find that to be valuable commentary. Or is it just a matter of slinging mud against the wall and hoping that people will show up to watch it ooze down to the ground? I don't know. It's depressing to think that America is so far gone that passes for trenchant political commentary. But then, you know, talking about wearing out a theme, I don't feel so bad about this kind of thing when I consider the way that the $30 million a year junkie, the oxymoron, Flush Flemball, gets away with stuff. Talk about a guy who ought to be waterboarded. This is just amazing. He's got this theme that he keeps working every time when he mentions Hillary Clinton. He can't do it without going immediately to some reference, some sexual reference, and particularly a sexual reference about men's genitalia. And it's positively astonishing that this, again, passes for viable, trenchant political commentary in this country. I mean, it doesn't all have to be dry and boring, but does it have to be just nasty?
They've got pledged delegates on the Democrat side. They have allocated delegates. They have super delegates. The pledged delegates that can change their pledges. So two things that we can be assured of. The superdelegates are going to determine the winner here. Because it looked...
Okay, hold on. Let's see if we can cue this a little bit forward.
Best, and it's really closer to winning, it'll go that way. Or, I can say, you know what? Do I want to cross the Clintons? Do I like my future? Do I want to have a future? And they're not going to be relying on Obama to give them their future. The Clintons have their tentacles spread deep, woven intricately throughout the Democrat Party hierarchy. They are the machine.
Now, granted, I probably don't sound my best, but do you hear him gasping into the microphone? This is the Dean of American Radio. $30 million a year. And number one on Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100. Just, dear God.
All you folks at MoveOn.org and Emily's List to the Nags from names like George Soros, Ron Burkle, wheeler dealers you never heard of until 2 weeks ago, like Frank Giustra, who has ended up sending Clinton $131 million to his library and massage parlor for Clinton helping him get a mining uranium deal over in Kazakhstan. But that's all the least of this. The Clintons will not concede. If the superdelegates go Obama, the Clintons will not concede on the cheap.
Here it comes.
They have the threat of a lawsuit over Michigan, and then the threat of a lawsuit over Florida. And as you know, lawsuits can go from a court to a court of appeals to the Supreme Court, unless, of course, the party pays tribute to the Clintons, and what might that tribute be? I have no clue, but whatever you might imagine it to be, double it or triple it.
So he's calling on his less than astute, less than genius level listenership to just imagine something evil that the Clintons would do and then assume that it's real. You wouldn't let me get away with that for 5 minutes on any given night of this program. But wingers lap it up. But that's not all. Here comes the reference we've all been waiting for.
Because Mrs. Clinton's testicle lockbox.
Bingo! The oldest misogynistic slur in the lexicon. The castrating bitch. The strong woman, the castrating female. The nightmare of the authoritarian party. A woman with her own opinions.
Is big enough for the entire Democrat hierarchy. Not just some people in the media. And whether they have been taking steroids and the testicles are smaller than usual, does it?
Who does the steroids out here, Rush? Democrats? Buddy, feel again, wrong party.
Matter. Her lockbox, her testicle lockbox, can handle everybody in a Democrat hierarchy.
Her testicle lockbox. Beautiful, isn't it? That is professional broadcasting. Her testicle lockbox. So while Rush was babbling on about testicle lockboxes, he couldn't find time to talk about something that really matters. Oh, no. He couldn't find time to talk about the real Republicans in the world. He didn't have time to talk, for instance, about, oh, let's see, to talk about United States bankruptcy court judge Robert Sommer. have you heard about U.S. Bankruptcy Court Judge Robert Sommer? Maybe it'll show up on Olbermann's program. It won't show up on Katie Couric's or Brian Williams's or Charlie Gibson's or Britt Hume's. Neither will the story of Republican legislator, supporter of the American family, and Maryland politician Robert McKee. Robert McKee is a very, very dedicated crusader against child pornography. From rural Washington County in western Maryland. He was one of the Maryland leaders of the Romney for President campaign. Suddenly, he turned in his resignation. He also resigned as executive director of Big Brothers Big Sisters. You know why? I don't have to read you the ultimate paragraph, but I will. He's a Republican. He goes about crusading against child pornography. He was the sponsor of Maryland's Child Protection from Predators Act. Sponsored a proposal to collect DNA samples from sexual predators. Lots of other sexual offender and child abduction bills. And, of course, he was also a chaplain for the First Christian Church. Law enforcement authorities, both the FBI and county sheriff's office, who are conducting a child pornography investigation, seized two computers, videotapes, and printed materials when they searched Robert McKee's home in Hagerstown 2 weeks ago. Because Robert McKee is a kiddie porn junkie. Robert McKee is another Republican sexual predator. But Rush Limbaugh was so busy talking about Hillary Clinton's testicle lockbox that he couldn't find time to talk about the testicles that Republican Robert McKee has fondled on little boys, because he himself is a sexual monster. No time to talk about Robert Sommer either. U.S. bankruptcy judge Robert Sommer of Boston. He's taking a leave of absence. He's going to knock off completely and resign from the bench on April 1st. Had a little car wreck in Manchester, New Hampshire last week. A little fender bender where he rear-ended a pickup truck. He has pled guilty to the DUI. And on the WBZTV.com website, that's all there is. A federal bankruptcy judge based in Boston has resigned after pleading guilty to drunk driving. Judge Robert Sommer will step down April 1st after already being on leave. He is accused of rear-ending a pickup truck in Manchester, New Hampshire last week. Under the plea deal, Sommer agreed to have his driver's license suspended for a year, but he could get it back sooner if he successfully completes an alcohol awareness program. That's all there is. That's it. Oh, but it's not. It's not. Because, you see, there was more to it than that. At the time he rear-ended the vehicle, Judge Sommer, a good conservative judge who won't engage in judicial activism from the bench and legislate from the bench. Well, you know how this one ends, too. At the time he rear-ends the truck in Manchester, New Hampshire, the cop comes up and asks him for his driver's license. And the bless his heart, we give the cops a tough time, but the cop in this case investigating the wreck was actually pretty professional about things. He just asked for Judge Sama's driver's license, and in his report he wrote, he had a difficult time locating his license in his purse. He passed over it multiple times before removing it. And that was all he said. However, when authorities removed Judge Sama from the vehicle, they said he was wearing a lovely black cocktail dress, fishnet stockings, and high heels. The arresting officer reported Sama smelled of alcohol, slurred his speech, and fell backwards against the door frame while getting out of his car. That wasn't because he was drunk. That was because he was not used to the heels. You know, the little spiky things. They're tough to walk in. Not a word about the black evening gown or the fishnets in the so-called professional media coverage. No. The bar he was visiting, by the way, the mugshot has him with blue eyeshadow on. I'll leave that to the fashionistas to determine its appropriateness. The judge wasn't coming home from a fancy dress ball or a late-season Halloween party. No. Nope. He'd been having gin and tonics at the Breezeway Pub, which bills itself as New Hampshire's favorite gay and alternative bar. On the first and third Thursday of every month, they have Goth Night. The judge, as the blog that I'm looking at notes, was not goth. The second and fourth Thursdays, however, are kamikaze drag. It's pathetic. It's just pitiful. And yet, here's a comment on the blog. The sole fact that he was a Bush appointee to the bankruptcy court, no less, should not make this guy fair game for ridicule. If you have more, spill it. Otherwise, back off. This would be a great world if all of us had the courage and lived in circumstances that allowed us to be open and honest about the details of our own lives. Well, he's a bankruptcy judge. How many times has he sat there in his robe and looked people crippled with medical debt in the eye and told them, you're not going to be able to bankrupt that? How many people's homes has he taken away? How many people's sole means of getting to and from work has he deprived them of? How many times has he stood on the side of credit card companies and against family values? And yeah, it's pathetic that he's a closeted queen. And it is pathetic that this is a country where people can't live the way that they want to live. But you know what? That includes people who can't live with a roof over their heads that he took away. No quarter asked, none given. Thanks for being around this evening. Peter is a little bit under the weather, so he'll be a rerun this evening. But we'll be back with the horn section and then All Foxed Up at midnight Eastern, the horn section at 11. Thanks to John Fox and to Peter Godbold. Again, Peter with yeoman service during another computer nightmare. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who has dumped oodles of hours into retooling and revamping the White Rose Society website, whiterosesociety.org. If you value what happens on the horn, you value what happens at whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the many, many hundreds of dedicated members of Coal River Mountain Watch for the hard work that they do. Be a part of the solution. Go, join. It's not even expensive. CRMW.net. Be part of the solution along with us. and always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Kids, it's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good morning, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 108 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, January the 24th, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. on Thursday, January the 24th, 2008, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to participate. I'll be giving out the toll-free numbers and the toll numbers shortly. If you're not listening shortly after 9 p.m., you're listening to one of the archive streams, and we appreciate your listening in any way. We are glad to have you participate in the show and email us later or email us during the show or call in any way you'd like to participate. This is Conversation Radio. Bob is completely correct that many people do listen to these shows as a podcast or a stream. In fact, probably the majority of the listeners to this network do listen at their own schedule at some point other than the time that it is actually airing. Of course, being listed over at White Rose Society is a huge advantage. White Rose Society, of course, carries our streams and is known to be the holy grail aggressive talk radio on the Internet. You can find millions of hours there. Maybe you might like to drop White Rose a email to webmaster@whiterosesociety.org, and we can get Strictly Confidential there, too. You will find the name there, but actually there are no working links all the way back to August, July, something like that. But anyway, it would be great to have this show available as an archive there, too. That's a wonderful advantage to be included amongst the wonderful progressive programming over at White Rose Society. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links to our chat room, which is active as we speak. You'll find links to the main Head On Radio Network site, where you can find out about all the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. There are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. As I said, the toll-free line is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That translates into 877-443-2366. That's 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that. You'll save listener-supported radio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333.